This is the fifth and last in-person MUM session. Of course, Myron is the star of the conference. I beat
everybody else.
Beat them all out. They felt so humiliated by their cheap papers that they said, let's hear more from Myron. So Myron's going to have his fifth paper. We're going into postgraduate work now. So this is December 19th, 2011. So Myron will be flying back to New York tomorrow, right, Myron?
That's right.
Yeah. So anybody else is going to be on this conference, they'll have to get in touch with me. You've still got a few days left.
I don't know what you guys are going to do without me.
I know. Most of them just went off surfing, swimming. They were humiliated by Myron's brilliance. There's hope for the McLuhan Quadrant now. Now that Myron's here, he's going to resuscitate this whole meme.
I even brought some nice weather back, Bob.
Yeah, you did. He overcame his employer's negativity and broke through the dull pallor. It was a result of that where I came from New York. Okay, so begin.
I guess we're going to discuss two things today, death and copyright.
Yeah, it used to be death
two
and
things, yeah, two things that you can count on in life.
Okay, what's the first thing? Who's the guy who wrote the book on death?
Ernest Becker wrote The Denial of Death. Back, I forget even the date of it, sometime in the 1962 maybe. So he was a contemporary of McLuhan's. But he was on a completely different tangent. He was, an anthropologist who, after a really illustrious career in anthropology, came up with this book that he'd been wanting to write, culture anthropologist, came up with this book that he'd wanted to write for 20, 30 years. And it basically brought together all of his knowledge, cultural anthropology and psychology, into a grand unified theory of death. And that was the effects of death on culture, on the individual, on society, and structure. Basically, his whole thesis was that most, if not all, of our cultural institutions are actually buffers against thinking about death. Mm. And I think it's a really good concept to bring up here in Maui, where everything here is a buffer against thinking deeply or clearly.
You've even found it hard to think here.
Yeah.
While you've been here.
Oh yeah, everything here is sort of, you know, blocks you, you know, or interrupts you.
It's a great place to sit out the Armageddon.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting to look at, you know, death as a medium, because it is. I mean, it's something that maybe we don't create, but it's something that affects us. We create, of course, every idea surrounding death. We create institutions, and that's so. To me, it has a lot to do with media, and I think that especially once and if we conquer death, it's going to cause us to become a whole new species.
Right. Have you seen the book The Global Village with Bruce Powers and McLuhan? Said media and transformation to the 21st century. That's the only place. Well, it's maybe another place, but that's the only place where Bruce Powers talks about McLuhan talking about death and makes it a big issue in the preface. It's pretty interesting. So if you check what McLuhan, his interaction with McLuhan over them talking about death, and McLuhan makes an insight on death. And the other thing is
what was it?
Some bizarre McLuhan media thing, you know. There's a different way of saying it, like seeing yourself was death, and the narcissist was death, maybe. I can't remember right now. I had the book. I could look it up and call you on that.
You couldn't bring it because you were hauling all your equipment here.
Yeah, all my computers.
Your Apple.
My Apple computers. My Apple laptops. But the other thing is this book, have you seen Spiral, where he makes little commentaries on images and on this avant-garde filmmaker Sorrel Etrog. He does a film called Spiral. And through that, McLuhan talks about life and death. Birth and what is it, death and life and death. And there's one article in the mid-70s where he uses that phrase, talking about Eliot's poetry was about life and death and death in life.
Hmm.
So those are the only areas you see, other than when he wrote about abortion, he called the abortion clinics and the hospitals as slaughterhouses, like in a meat world. He was talking about the mechanization of death. So there's an interesting point. You got death as an archetype, but he went into the media dynamics that pre-print societies did not hang their faces him in a dull, boring, or bitter way, and life is short and brutish. Now, LaRouche's life is short and British. That was LaRouche's pun on anti-Queen. but the cliche is life is short and brutish. McLuhan said that was the effect of the printing press. The medieval people didn't have that fear. Now, there's probably lots of evidence they were, because there was evidence, the church played on fear, but there's a different image of death as each medium comes along.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you could say the population is not, at least in the Western world, this is probably what McLuhan said, the East goes West and the West goes East. The West goes East and starts getting fascinated with Eastern religions, which don't believe in death. They believe in reincarnation or the void or something. They don't have the hang-up.
Living on in memories and
yeah,
ancestor worship. And
right. So he said that. So he would he used the phrase the Castanedas. He says the Castanedas have taken over our culture. This would be, he said that by 76, 77. That's Charles Castaneda's books, the New Age books. The ones that got people into believing reincarnation and psychic stuff, that becomes a really big meme in the West. And I don't think people are as afraid of death now as they were 40 years ago in the West.
Well, I'd have to disagree with you there, Bob, because I think that what the West going East was, in part at least, was the effect of it, so that they don't embody the East. They pick and choose, just like the East picks and chooses.
Yeah.
The Western things, like a religious buffet, you know, started in the 70s, where people just picked what they liked from one religion or another,
yeah,
and sort of that became their thing. And I think that whatever allowed them to keep on living the way they wanted to live, they took from the East, you know. And
it was
I don't know that, right, I don't know that it really internalized these ideas, not to their detriment. I mean, who can really embody somebody else, you know?
Well, a lot of the reaction to that drift in the 60s was the neoconservative and the fundamentalist Christianity and the born-again stuff. That was a renewed fear of death in the culture. Now, I'd bring my five-body model in. I'd say that the chemical body, when people say they're not worried about death anymore, they don't know that they actually are expressing a preference for the chip body or the TV body. And the chemical body seems to be not that involved in their lives. They can kind of dismiss it. And so the focus of that denial of death.
Yeah, what a lot of people say these days that I've found, a lot of, you know, friends of mine, and a lot of people I've talked to about it, is they say that, I'm not afraid of death, I'm just afraid of the pain associated with dying. And I don't believe them for a second. But
yeah, because only.
But that's, to me, that's another way to buffer against it. So believing in reincarnation is another way to sort of avoid thinking about death.
About pain?
About death.
Yeah, but they're saying it's pain. That's what they're worried about.
Right, but I mean, I think that they're just displacing it. I don't think that.
Well, what would isn't death pain?
Not for the person that's dead.
So you're saying a void. They're afraid of the void, of nothing.
Yeah, what they're saying is basically the same thing. They're just not admitting it to themselves. They're saying the same thing, that they're afraid of death.
They're changing the
because
words.
Because they're afraid. Exactly. They're just trying to. It's like they're trying to. They're using words as a buffer against saying that they're afraid of death. I don't know why that is necessarily. It has something to do with what you said, the five bodies.
Yeah.
Because people believe in another body that lives on now, and I think that maybe it's an anticipatory thing where they think that some part of themselves does go on, and that could be an internalization. But I think it's more to do with the computer and the virtual bodies.
Yeah. Because you could say that people are a bit immune to the idea of death because they see it so much in the media the last 30 years. Images of death are on TV every night.
Yeah.
And so the image of death they're not afraid of, but they're afraid of what it would do to their physical body, which would be pain.
Well, that's what they say they're afraid of, but they're actually afraid of actually experiencing death. You know? So, yeah, they say they're not afraid of death because it always happens to somebody else. What they're actually saying is, I'm not afraid of death as long as it happens to them.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of it.
Not
it
to
never
me.
Happens to me. It's always happening to other people in the media.
Right.
So, and that's a big strong factor. McLuhan said, we want bad news so we can feel the emotion of surviving. So people get a lot of survivor emotion, and it didn't happen to me, as you get more and more violent news. Like Mayor was just saying, you see death every day.
It's not in our reality.
No.
It's not real. It's virtual.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the TV.
And it looks more You know, it looks worse than it probably will ever be unless we have World of Warcraft in our, you know, backyard.
Yeah, what they're projecting in the imagery, you don't think will happen to people physically. You don't see a violent...
It can, but...
Generally, our experience... Right, I think you're right.
We,
I think that
you
it,
know,
our experience,
I mean, do you ever see dead bodies like you would in, you know, Iraq in a war zone? You don't. I mean, we have lived in a very sterilized world. With
I don't agree.
Death experience,
I think we
very
see,
sterilized.
I think we see it all the time. I was just watching CNN, and they were showing...
Well,
it's just
you see it on the news, but
yeah.
not
it
here.
In media.
You don't see it here on
you
the ground.
You see it on video games. You see it on Robot Chicken.
Yeah, but not
you
physically.
You know...
As a matter of fact, I know that there's all kinds of accidents on this island that they don't report.
I know. But I was just hearing about it yesterday. How there's been two deaths in the past couple of days.
Yeah.
Oh,
one
yeah.
in McKenna and one over there. Just they don't want to publicize it because
yeah.
they want the tourism.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't report. How did you hear about it?
At the bar. At the bar for really smart people. After the conference, we all went over to.
Yeah. The ones that won't talk to me.
Yes.
Especially if it's any kind of. You know, controversial type stuff.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. and they don't report the broken necks at McKenna Beach that happen all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
People don't want to come here and think about that.
Yeah.
That's why Jaws was so terrifying, in a way. You know, because if there's one sacred place, you don't want to think about that friggin' beach, you know?
So what's the theme here? So, how would you recommend people...
I think that it's coming to a fore right now, in our time, in our lifetimes. There's somebody by the name of what's his name? He called himself the modern Methuselah, Aubrey de Grey, and he's over at Cambridge University, I believe, and he's really doing a ton of research into. And this goes on. There's a three-pronged approach right now, into conquering death, the quest for immortality. But Aubrey de Grey. Is talking about, I think it's genetic engineering or artificial bacteria that we can engineer to repair our cells from the inside. He says that there's about a 50-50 chance that within the next 30 years, we'll be able to turn an 85-year-old into a 50-year-old, basically. And then have them keep being repaired so they never age after that. He thinks that within our lifetimes or our children's lifetimes right now, there's a very good chance that our children will be living to 1,000 years old.
Okay.
There's really nothing within the human...
And you think that's a serious disservice? That people never, if they live 1,000 years, they don't have to confront death? That's an issue?
I think it's great.
Oh, you like that?
I think it's friggin' fantastic. I think death it robs us for no good reason of every experience that we've acquired and I think it's a horrible thing, death. I think that every death is a tragedy.
So you're
Kim Jong Il.
Yeah, you're not asking people to confront death as something inevitable.
No, I don't. And I think that's what would separate me from a lot of, you know, culture theorists and things like that. That they'd say, oh, you have to make people aware, conscious. I think that being aware of our fear of death is a worthwhile approach because it makes us aware of. It hopefully would make us aware of why we have these feelings about the other, you know, races or you know, people that are unlike us. Why we have feelings of hatred towards them for no really good reason, and what it maintains in us. And it maintains our and what prompts it. You know.
What do you think of I think Jeremy Bentham, utilitarianism or Hedon, whatever that philosopher was 200 years ago, whatever it was called.
Oh, that one.
Jeremy Bentham, and he said that all life is based on a pleasure-pain principle.
Yeah.
Everything is judged on it, whether I go for pleasure or pain. So,
Freud, too.
Okay, yeah, Freud may have updated that. And now LaRouche says that would be an Aristotelian view of our existence is based on sensory data.
Mm-hmm.
And the Platonists believe there's more than our sensory data. So LaRouche was against Bentham and Freud and all these guys because they based their theories on sensory data.
Hmm.
Okay, that's just another way of looking at that. When you say Freud updated it, LaRouche said, oh, yeah, Freud just continued what Bentham did, and Bentham continued Francis Bacon, who continued Aristotle. Aristotle's big bugaboo for LaRouche.
Yeah.
So McLuhan was an Aristotelian, or Thomas, if you want to characterize him. He based his whole sensory model, his own model, on the senses and the interaction of the senses. It's interesting is that McLuhan, was he presenting the objectification of media as extensions of our senses as a put-on? He wasn't really an Aristotle. He was a Platonist, or neither. Or he was a blatant Platonist.
I think as a Christian, as a Catholic, I mean, he's got to be somewhat of a Platonist, right?
Well, their philosopher is Thomas Aquinas, and he's seen as an Aristotelian.
Yeah.
So it's contradicting. Now, McLuhan said once in an interview, "I can teach Plato or Aristotle in the classroom." Like, he just said one or the other. It didn't matter. He didn't identify with the other. And he quoted Samuel Taylor Coleridge, who said that for the West, men are either Platonists or Aristotelians.
That's the truth. I mean, the entire, you can look at the entire history of philosophy, and it's really just an attempt to tarry with their original
right. And what,
fight.
And Dark Matter told me the other day that all philosophy is about death.
It is, and that's the thing. So is culture, so is religion, obviously. And so, so I mean, all media, in a way. If it's something that we create,
well, media,
there's a sense in which it's created as a buffer to death. And I mean, I think that TV and radio depictions of death, just like photography, when it started to become a really populist, around the turn of the century, when people really were able to start taking photographs, they were extremely expensive. And the only time you really took a photograph of your family, it wasn't for happy family photos. That didn't exist then. It was basically to remember your child after he had died, as an infant kind of thing, or remembering, you know, a grandmother. So it was pictures of dead people, basically, and that's how that medium started. Since then, it's not about preserving the real image of death. It's about you know, presenting a hyper death, a hyper real death in the news and things like that.
The news is.
But we're returning to that now with all these like cell phones, with all these, you know, it comes to a point where if a lot of people have access to this technology, or if very few have access to this technology, it shows death as it actually is. And that's one of the first uses of photography. Now, once more people have access to it, it becomes less about death, and it becomes more. And if you do show death, it's done in a really horrendous fashion, right? So it's portraying death when it's on the news and things like that. And it also, you know, coincides with, say, the Nazis or the Stalin famine, the induced famine in Ukraine, or the Nazis in the Holocaust. It coincides with a huge upheaval in just killing just massive amounts of people, like in a factory sense.
Okay, let me stop you there. Since this is about McLuhan, you're not bringing in the changes in the image of death caused by each medium. That's what McLuhan adds to it. How did the medium change the image of death or preservation? I'd say news is a massive operation to preserve social reality. Like you said, the photograph was 100 years ago. Okay, these are going to be gone soon, so we have an image of them, dead people. This thing of 24/7 coverage is based on the idea we can't let anything be forgotten. So they're covering everything as much as possible. So look at that way. The photograph 100 years ago was the first beginning of a virtual fossilization. Now, that's why we have news. If people didn't have news, they'd be upset. Because they have to think that something's being monitoring everything and being preserved. That's McLuhan says that the whole crux of our time is news.
Yeah, it's a strange
thing. Think of that, the medium of news today. And
again,
strange thing, because so much
is back so again much, and again and again.
Yes, and it seems like nothing dies. Anything can be replayed.
Yeah.
So there's when he says the instant replay is a big metaphysical change. The instant replay is a big, that may be what he's talking about. It changes our image of death because it can always be brought back.
There's news and then there's 24-hour news. You know,
okay,
24-hour news, they have to keep dredging this stuff up and replaying. I mean, I was watching all day today, you know, while I was working on my paper. I was watching on CNN. It was just the same story, basically. They got so much juice out of this one story of Kim Jong-il dying and the uncertainty in the aftermath, you know. And it's really hilarious because they're talking about the CIA being in tatters about it. They don't know what's going on because they found out a day later than... accident and he actually died.
They pulled up stuff.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
you're responding to the content.
Everything out
yeah, but you're responding to the content. This is a conference on McLuhan. Is the
no, I'm responding to what the medium of the 24-hour news.
Yeah, which is coverage. Coverage is what the whole thing is. Doesn't matter what the content is or how trivial, how much is repeated. If the media suddenly stopped, you turn on the TV or this, and nothing was there, that's when you would have panic because you'd have a sense that there was no fucking covering of anything. It's preservation. The mayor gets it.
Yeah, but I think that there are two different media. I think that there came to a certain point that we had all these cable channels, and somebody said, hey, let's do a news 24 hours a day channel.
Yeah.
And that's another creation of
that's
by
Ted,
humans.
Ted,
to extend what?
Ted Turner, 30 years ago, 1981, is the 30th anniversary of CNN.
So what was that impetus? I mean, it must have been a reason, and it was a creation of humanity, so it can be studied as a medium, as a separate medium than just the news hour at 7 o'clock.
This is where you could bring in the archetype of death, which is a buffer against denial of death, is what all institutions are. Base as an archetype, they all go back to denial of death. Well, when a new medium comes in, the reason we have this new medium and we want to get better media is we want better ways of denying death and preserving the sense of ongoing immortality in the world of communication. See, so when they
I guess the reason that I brought it up as a different medium is because I think that yes, coverage does do that. Does preserve posterity.
Yeah.
But I think that the 24-hour news cycle or the 24-hour news station turns it into a throwaway thing because they'll never mention it again tomorrow.
No, it's like
you know, they'll never mention Kim Jong-un
right.
again.
No, because that's the content's not important.
Yeah.
It's the covering of it. And when we had whatever cable TV in the late 70s and Ted Turner got the idea of doing 24/7, he just said, geez, we can do this whole denial of death even better. let's cover it 24/7. And everybody went for it, and it was a big hit.
Well, the opportunity for commercialization of those, you know, hours of news, it's just irrelevant what they're covering.
Yeah.
Because this week it'll be Kim Jong-il. Next week it'll be the next fantastical thing that's gone on that they could focus on.
Which proves
on.
The point. You understand that, man? The point, the content is not important.
They're using it to sell.
No, they're not. They're making you think that someone is keeping a preservation of everything. It's a God function.
Yeah, I would say it's the reverse. The commercials that sell the content.
Well, that's the bad news, the good news thing.
Yeah.
McLuhan said that you have a lot of ads, and that's good news, and good news upsets you because it asks you to adapt to this new product and change and take on. So he thought advertising was really had a bad news effect. So you need a lot of bad, technically bad disasters as the content news because people could feel better because they survived it and didn't die. So bad
it's
news
like
sells good
news. Like
something
that happens to them. Those people on TV.
Yeah. So bad news sells good news. Then he says it's reversed. The advertising is good news, but it has a bad news effect. Bad news, bad tragedies, like Kim Jong, the Korean guy, that's bad news technically, but it has a good effect because you didn't die and he did. See, so the good news, bad news is the yin-yang there. But that's the content. The form of the communities need to know is McLuhan's phrase for it. The community needs to know what's going on so they know there is a community. And that's what news journalists are, that's why people
that's
do.
That's what's going on.
Yeah. And Robert Frank, this great movie in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, and he has this guy up on the hill and the peasants down digging on the beach, and every day the guy would turn on his little transistor radio and you'd hear static. You go, good, no news. No, you go, no news. And you hear like a slow speech, you know, static a little worse, but he'd go, no news. He was waiting for when he turned on the transistor and there was nothing there. That's when he was going to freak, you know. So he turned on and said, okay, good, no news. You might hear a little word or two like there was some kind of content. But the point was is that he kept turning on to see when there wouldn't be anything, like no dead air, meaning electricity's cut off.
How do people deal with the dead air? Because there is no dead air.
We went into dead air last time a bit.
We did?
Yeah, remember?
Here, yeah. We went into, what was that?
The biggest paper yet.
Yeah, what was that? Dead air was.
The
interval.
Zizek and Hitchens.
Yeah.
Dead air versus gesture.
You know Christopher Hitchens? You ever heard of him?
Yeah.
Yeah, he passed. Well, you would know it, but he knows everything because of the class of 24/7. Or did you know that he passed?
I didn't know he passed.
Yeah. The other day. But back to this. So you get. That's what McLuhan means by the. When he says the medium is the message, it doesn't matter what the content is. And it's an important insight to see that the function of we know. we got to have a sense, even Tribal Society had to have a sense that something else, somebody out there detached was monitoring everything and preserving everything and keeping the collective memory going. That is what a medium is. It's a new form of memory preservation. So now you have cable TV in the 70s and people get VCRs and all that, all new forms of expression. So you needed a bigger news network or a sense of a bigger news network 24/7 to cover all the media that people could make with 70s technology compared to 50s technology. Right? So more and more proliferation.
Now you need four 24-hour news stations just to keep up with all the cell phone video.
No, you need blogospheres. You need everything on the chip. Blogospheres, people.
It's more than four news stations. It's like,
that's
so
TV. Yeah, that's TV.
Now.
Think of the chip body. Where's the expression of it on there? The constant email and the constant people checking websites, the constant looking at this and that. They do it on their own. So people have become their own news channel by, in a sense, they register. Look at Facebook. Like I said that on one of the mom things. People can't connect anymore. So they have to have a hyper connection. That's why the kids they deny death by always staying in touch with each other and making sure, emphatically emailing and texting each other.
You stay at surface level and you don't think about any death.
Yeah, so the population took over the role of CNN. They're doing it themselves now.
Right, it's actually really funny you mention it because Facebook just caused kind of a ruckus a couple months ago. They redesigned their site. And what they did was, it was kind of a big meme, a big joke, because they put basically a Facebook news feed at the side column of your Facebook news feed.
Yeah.
It's like a ticker,
right.
Just in case you didn't feel like scrolling down. Right. It's a ticker of everything everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
It made
like
it
a news
visible.
Ticker.
It's visible,
right there.
Yeah.
Anything that anybody else, if they're listening to a song right now on Facebook, you can see it pop up in the ticker.
But what was it,
going
what's
with
the one
everything
for them?
Everybody does.
What's the one for them that's already there? You say there's two Facebook.
There's a news feed when you first sign into Facebook. It'll show the news feed from your friends, whatever they posted.
Okay.
This news feed is, so the joke was, hey,
another news feed.
I see that you like Facebook, so we put a Facebook inside your Facebook. So you can Facebook all the time.
Well, what is this one inside? What does it do?
It's another news feed ticker that scrolls automatically. It shows you all the real-time actions of all of your Facebook friends, and even some of their friends.
Isn't that what the first one does?
Yeah, but it doesn't. It didn't update automatically necessarily.
Or as
often. Yeah, so it's a hotting up of the entire media.
So, and of course, that's the expression that always needs to be what they call a meta level.
Yeah.
That needs another frame where it's looking after you.
Okay.
So the invisible environment. Okay, McClellan says we're always living in the past, and the hidden environment's invisible, inaudible. That is what God always was, and God was always death. So the invisible environment is death. So when you say denial of death,
exactly.
That's a denial of the eternal invisible environment phenomenon, and there always has to be something monitoring us. That's what I guess meant by
right,
collective.
It's a life ticker.
Yeah.
And another thing that Facebook just introduced just this week to everybody was this new brand to everybody. Well, they did.
That's great.
They were in beta. It's a new redesign that basically takes all of your status updates, all the detritus and data trash that you've put on Facebook the whole time you've been on it, and formats it into this timeline of your life.
Wow.
So it's basically. And I haven't opted into it because I don't want any part of that.
Yeah.
But now people are freaking out because they have to like get rid of all these photos that nobody could ever really see before.
Because
it was so buried in the past.
And now they.
But now it's everything that you've done is in the forefront, so people are freaking out.
That's an invasion. This is
totally
terrorism. And Facebook, they don't seem to understand.
No,
people willingly participate.
Yeah, they go with it.
I don't think people have any right to like complain because.
I think you have a right to complain.
You can opt out of everything and say.
But you can't, though, is the thing. Because, I've looked into this a lot. I've done a lot of this.
Yeah.
And the problem with Facebook, and they actually were just fined, and they have to actually obey these new regulations just for them. Because so many times, they basically, you agree when you sign up to the terms of service, but they've changed the terms of service without any heads up about five times now. Completely changed. You know, you could find yourself, if there's a picture of you on Facebook, because you're on Facebook, because there's a picture of you,
and because
they can use your likeness to promote Facebook as an ad, in an ad.
Why did they get fined? What's the issue there?
For those things. For
changing
the entire terms
so
of using the site. They can't do that anymore. They have to stick to the terms that are there now or whatever.
You see, it's a sense of denial of death or like coming to a starting point. Those people at Facebook right now are trying to figure out how can we keep people, they think, fused to Facebook.
Well, it's about getting ready for Web 3.0.
Okay.
It's about getting people, their website ready for that.
Practical, what do you see
well, really,
would be the thing they're trying to get to that you call Web
3.0?
Everything
Facebook does is to make it easier for marketing, basically.
Okay.
To make it the most robust platform to market your products or your college or your hobby or whatever.
And that means making yourself visible to everybody.
Making everything you do semantically analyzed.
Semantically.
And there's not even, I don't even know if there's a word for it. Cause it's
mining.
Not semantic because it's semiotic even.
Mining. You mine
semiotic
everything?
Mining. Yeah. Yeah,
to find more connections that the marketing can... And buying for data
to say, oh, you like
graphing.
Oh, you like, exactly. And they call it their open graph.
Open
graph protocol.
Yeah. Open graph.
Exactly
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Which is like profiling.
Yeah.
So they're always making, that's like nano.
It's about drilling down as much as possible what you might be.
Right. Now, I would call that profile, that open, the graphing is the big picture, the meta level that
yeah.
societies all require all the time. I mean, it was a simpler one. You know, thousands of years ago where they do a ritual. That would be an open graph where, okay, something bigger than us, the gods, we appease them, they're going to regenerate us.
Yeah.
So always, and so Facebook takes over the role of being a god, and it thinks it still has to make shit up all the time because it might die itself if it doesn't remain
well,
relevant.
It has to keep producing...
purpose.
Like, yeah, well, it's producing its own purpose because it's not even clear that any of that information makes people buy things more.
Right, right, right.
Or more, you know, people's tastes change. Just because their friends like this and they like this doesn't mean that they're going to like this third product that they think that they're going to market to them. But it's not clear that even works well.
Now, that's why McCool may have said in the 60s that Madison Avenue couldn't condition the most.
Hmm.
He also said mass media don't affect the private civil consciousness. So those factors in there... When McLuhan says medium is the message, people think the medium is the message,
yeah.
But it doesn't affect people individually. So advertising is a big fake profile.
Right.
I mean, Nielsen ratings and all that.
Yeah.
They
marketers do it regardless of whether you're going to choose.
Because
well,
what
not.
Else are they going to do?
That's right. They got to take their chances that you might.
That's right. A big
they might work.
That you
yeah.
might.
The CEO of a huge conglomeration, corporation, whatever. Said back in the 70s, I think it was, I know I'm wasting half of my advertising budget completely, half of it, straight up.
Yeah.
I just don't know which goddamn half I'm wasting. We have to just throw the money
it's all
at
probing.
It. Yeah.
And so McLuhan mimed that as a philosopher by saying, I'm probing back.
Yeah.
See, he
exactly.
was miming what the Android meme was doing.
And that's why he had such an affinity for advertising.
Yeah. Well, he knew that was the new meta framework.
Right.
And then he says advertising is dead in the late 60s. Now, that's an interesting statement. What's dead and what took over? Because that's 40 years ago, and people think they worked.
I wasn't aware that he said that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He says in a letter to Playboy that advertising is now an art form and dead. You know, it's no
what
longer...
surrounded it, then?
Culture and action, what I call the mythic stage. Everybody's own culture was an ad for itself. So tourism is a part of that, and the neoconservative fundamentalism that shows up in different cultures, the Arab fundamentalism, the Christian fundamentalism, that is like, I'm going to take my culture, and it's going to be my ad. And that's why he said advertising advertises advertising.
Yeah.
So when cultures start to do it...
And then you start getting tattoos. That's
yeah,
when tattoos
yeah,
become
yeah.
really big.
Yeah.
And that's when lifestyle becomes big, exactly.
In the 80s, yeah. Lifestyle becomes so that... The 80s TV is people celebrating everybody's lifestyle, which is a collective expression of advertising.
In the 70s is when you start getting the even minorities are represented, start to be represented in sitcoms and things
yeah.
like that. Start,
yeah.
Slice of life stuff. You know, you have the Jeffersons and you have
yeah.
that's
moving on up.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
So that's why McLuhan thought that the idea that culture and action, rather than the particular messages within the culture, what people think is propaganda, it's the culture and action. That's an important meme because that is what took over, and that's another expression of the medium as a message. The medium became the message. Advertising wasn't the message
anymore.
And that's why
sitcoms and TV shows and 24-hour news stations, the content of what they put out is actually the real advertisement for the commercial.
No, that's a good point because once we went past the satellite, that was the final extension where the whole planet got extended into a little planet that you could live in out
yeah.
in space. what comes after that, the digital. And that's where content and form merge, and content is the environment and is the meme. And that's why there's this friendly fascism where Kissinger and them start really controlling the news in the 70s and then the 80s, because what is said at the White House is the culture.
Yeah.
So the content did become the medium. And that's a strange thing we've been into ever since. Because then people, if the content becomes the hidden ground and controls everything, what's going to be said on that microphone at the White House? If the White House said, McLuhan's right, everybody starts studying McLuhan, that would be a massive effect, right? But he's never going to do that. What McLuhan says, if you're President of the United States, what would you do? You do nothing. Because you can't be biased towards any particular angle,
right.
Because everything will go that way.
Right.
So at the same time, though, by doing nothing, you're putting out a content message. And usually it's like, well, we don't know if that was a UFO, or we don't know if anybody really died there. They never know anything.
Yeah.
Remember Reagan, when he got put on trial in Iran-Contra, he says, I don't remember anything. They put, so that meant the content becomes the medium, so the old form, the old types of culture as forms, they became the battlefield, the culture war.
Mm.
Everybody put on their culture.
Right.
And started battling their clothing,
yeah,
against other cultures' clothing.
Right, and that's why you have such a division between NASCAR dads and hockey moms,
yeah,
and this and
gays
that.
Gays against Christians, you know, the culture wars and all those different levels.
Yeah.
And now, here's what's interesting. The medium is the message. Well, the content became the medium-shaping message, and all the forms became the content.
Well, here's something that just occurred to me about Occupy Wall Street. Their whole thing is, we are the 99% of people, but 99% of people don't live like friggin' homeless people.
Right, right.
In a park.
They're not.
So they're selling this idea that they are
the
lifestyle that everybody else is, but they're way off base.
Right, but see, this is what you do. You look at that the content of what they're saying and figure out what they're really saying, and they don't know it.
Yeah.
They're saying, they're like streakers. Remember streakers in where this guy would run across the Academy Awards naked?
Yeah.
So McLuhan said, streakers, he'd say, that's an art form. The streakers are showing us, satirizing the fact that we all get dressed up,
yeah,
and we got nowhere to go. Because when we're electronically discarnate, we can't go anywhere, you're already there. So a streaker made fun of people pretending to go somewhere and not dressing up. Okay, so what is Occupy Wall Street satirizing?
Well, that's the interesting thing about streakers, since we're on the topic of death, is they remind you of your animal nature. Because, you know, you're naked.
Yeah.
And so it reminds you of death, eventually.
But see, they're not standing there posing. They're running. Now, why are they running? They don't stop and show you. They're being a blur. So there was other factors they were showing.
Right. But the reason it's so terrifying to people, you know, why streakers are such a big deal,
the streakers,
is it really interrupts this whole thing.
Yeah. I was thinking the streakers had a new media ecological sensibility. Well, we don't want to upset people if I stop still and I see my dick. That's rather rude. So I'll just imply that I'm naked and zoom across the screen.
I think they're just...
I mean, they could have done it close, too, you know, but why
they're
didn't
they? They're not as confident as they... you know, would appear to be, oh, you're naked, you must be awfully confident to run through the stadium naked. But if they were really confident, they would stand there and not run.
That's right.
No, but that's the thing, though, is you're right. They want to show a lot. We're
alive. They're doing more than the nakedness. They're showing that we're all getting dressed up and rushing somewhere, and there's nowhere to go.
Right.
Okay, so look at Occupy Wall Street. What message are they giving? That, see, the streakers didn't know they were doing that. McLuhan would take a phenomenon and put depth in it.
No, they were the original adbusters, the Merry Pranksters or something.
Right, right. So you take Occupy Wall Street. They are saying, you know, people, you're actually doing nothing. You're producing endless information for itself, and nobody can follow it all. So it's a big void. So we represent everybody because we're a professional void people. We don't do nothing. We're homeless. So they're actually satirizing the homelessness of everybody.
Right.
Right? And they think we're 90%.
That's right.
We have an insight. When you're laughing, you're learning. Did you get it, Barry? Did you get it? You're not laughing as much. You should be laughing.
I was, yeah.
You're not paying attention. Yeah, I'm paying attention.
The whole Occupy thing just...
Yeah, so you get, well, see, that you're, but don't worry
about whether it's good or bad.
Yeah, look at the
That's what it is.
No, we can educate her. She needs an education.
It's pointless.
No, wait a minute.
You're
commenting on it. The efficient causality is going to get a revolution. No, no, it's not about that at all. It's the formal causality. What is it? What are they really communicating?
Look at it as an art form.
As an art form. As a theater piece that they were programmed to do, and they don't even know the message they're giving. All right? They're just zombies acting out a felt.
Because artists don't know what they're doing when they're doing it.
Yeah. So we look at the figure ground. This world is collectively homeless since currency died a couple of years ago. There's no currency, no nothing, no common. So we're collectively homeless. So that's what these homeless people said. Hey, it's our turn. And everybody is left.
They're perfecting the art of homelessness.
Yeah. And the average citizen just sees the content, doesn't see the formal dynamics. Says, well, what about your fucking idiots? Get a job. And they'll occupy, if they were smart, and say, you can't have a job. You don't have a job, sir. You're just typing to nobody. See, so you got to object to your personal reactions.
I got to interrupt you here, Bob, just because the podium, I can see from my stance over here on stage, the podium that you keep banging is a real problem for the microphone mounted on.
I keep banging my microphone. Sorry, I didn't notice it.
Yeah, be careful.
It's a virtual homeless microphone. I don't even know where it is.
Well, we mic'd you up, you know, before you do it.
Okay, so Bob, are they going to occupy for eternity?
Yeah, it's a big hit. It's like.
Well, there's no more. Nothing can happen anymore.
Where's it going to go?
The president's president forever. The president
it becomes an institution. They're going to set up. Those people dedicated to it, even some journalists, they'll keep it going as a museum.
As a museum.
It's like a play in Broadway. Which one's been going on for 20 years? The ladies
Cats.
Are up.
Cats.
Like
nobody's ever going to really listen to them.
No, not anymore. But who goes to Cats?
But we need them to be there as a museum.
Yeah. Who goes to Cats anymore?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go to Cats.
It helped. I mean, that's why Bloomberg didn't bust them. This will help our tourists.
The new Broadway.
This will help our tourists. This will bring money into New York. Bloomberg knew all along. He had his pitch right manager. He told him what the effects would be.
Yeah. Well, you're out laughing me, but yes, indeed, that is very funny.
Well, we've done a lot on Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah.
A lot of our conversations.
Because
I'm involved in with them and getting them on the radio.
You're trying to get them on the radio. You can't get them on the radio because they took Flaky.
They just flake out.
Gary gave them a whole network. I mean, Bill gave them a whole network. and they don't show up in time. They cancel the last minute.
Yeah, 10 minutes before they're supposed to be in the studio, they're like, oh, were we supposed to meet today?
Their message lists.
Right.
And they're proud of it.
Yep. No, and that's the truth. I mean, the General Assemblies are a joke at this point. Like, it's all just surface bullshit.
Yeah,
they don't get together and really, like, try to understand each other's viewpoints.
Yeah, I know that.
Like, I think this. How many other people think this?
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah, I guess I could think of that today.
Now, listen to this. I'm under Bob Fass and a couple other shows. He's from New York. And they often, like Rupert had on, they had actual homeless people on there, major organizers, and all of them said, the most frustrating thing is the General Assembly, because there's always a couple of nuts and hijack the thing, go on and on, and you can't shut them up. What?
And they're trying they're trying to be uber liberal, and you know
let everybody born equal.
Right.
And you can just
don't want to piss off the homeless.
Right.
It's embarrassing that they think that's the revolution.
Yeah. Well, what's even more amazing is it's a major media gave them coverage. That's the funny thing.
Well, they loved it for a while. But that was what they were complaining about the whole time. Nobody's talking about us. Why isn't anybody? And then all of a sudden, the next day, it was like, oh, we changed the entire conversation in America.
And now they go around saying, they come on Bob Fass and they say, we won because we became a big story.
We changed the conversation.
Yeah. So then you have some Occupy guy calls in. Well, wait a minute. Okay, yeah, we won, but now let's accomplish something. So he says he goes to the General Assembly meetings, and he gets very frustrated because nobody can get serious. Now, you then get these veterans and people who took it seriously. They cannot die. The denial of death. They say, oh, no, we'll get it going in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
They really, it's sad. They need this to keep going, and they want to achieve something.
Their last hurrah.
Their last hurrah.
Their last hoorah.
Yeah, and you can hear them saying, oh, no, it's not that bad, Bob. You know, it's we'll be back. It's going to get better. People, we'll work it out. And it's futile. I mean, no, it's kind of a pleading. It's kind of a hoping. It's gone back to like every other.
That's all they do. Please don't be pissed off at us that we're banging these drums.
Yeah.
You know, citizens of Zuccotti.
Zuccotti.
Please don't be mad at us. We just want to bang our drums for 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, instead of, you know, we'll knock it off from 9 hours, we'll do 4 hours.
That's what, that was the compromise, because there were two camps, these guys bongoing 24 hours and hating the serious guys. And then they finally got the majority of the top to get the drummers to go back to 4 hours.
Yeah.
Couldn't stop them.
Oh,
okay. We have an American citizen, you're totally outraged.
That's right.
She's a one percenter.
Yeah. So how are you going to have a revolution? I mean, you've got Arabs who are like 30 years behind. They think they got a revolution going, and they're getting shot over it. You know what I mean? There's no Occupy Wall Street getting shot. We're a civilized version of this play. The rough play, the rough cats, is being done.
Well, they modeled. I mean, they modeled themselves on that stuff.
Right.
The Arabs thing.
And they're probably hoping, a few of them, that they start getting shot because they think they'll have some revolution.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, that's really the whole thing. I mean, they're down there egging on the cops a lot.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what anybody tells you, there's a few of them that really want that because they think that it's in the service of, and that's, again, goes back to this communism thing, goes back to this whole culture theorist thing that I loathe so much, you know, that they're willing to sacrifice people, people like, you know, entities with entire lives and families and lovers,
they're police,
and they're willing to sacrifice them because they think that it'll get them more media attention.
Right.
To me, that's where you draw the fucking line.
Okay, I got that. Now, that's a personal opinion. We're trying to keep it not the personal subjectivity here. Okay, talking technically. I did notice in a couple of the quick glimpses I saw on Brooklyn Bridge, the cops would be there being calm, and most of the protesters would be there being calm. There's always one or two guys that come up to the cops and start second basically spitting at the cops. They stand there wanting to fight. There's the big guys.
Right.
They're either cops themselves, agent provocateurs, or whatever, but after a while, you can't say the police were not right to hold back. And they try to hold back, but you can see that some of the...
So they bent over backwards to let them stay in the park for 2 months.
Right.
And, you know, and then they
hold back. But once the fight's on, a lot of bitter cops, whatever you want to call them, they'll take advantage of that and beat the shit out of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
They get released and go, oh, really? They probably would love to hit beat you. That they're being really stiff and proper for 3 hours, and then you break the veil, you're gonna get fucking beat, man.
And the funny thing is what they say when like while the cops are giving a beat down.
Yeah.
What they keep yelling whenever that happens or when they're pepper spraying people, they say, the whole world is watching.
Yeah.
The whole world is watching, and then you hear the chant. Well, what's that happening? Just go in and help the guy.
It's a
fucking cop.
See, that's where the media reality is more important than the actual chemical body.
Well, they need it to happen. They need it to keep happening.
You know, that's
just like the anthropologist needs the uncontacted tribe.
You know, do you know that that's on my chart? The phrase "the whole world's watching." I put that as a slogan for the Thompson Quadrant because that's 68 to 72. That was the big cry. In 68 in Chicago. The whole world's watching. Did you know that was the chant
about
there?
They readopted that. Okay.
Yeah, they take it from the hippies.
Right.
Or whatever, the whole group, which was...
The Civil Rights thing? Or?
No, that was the Democratic Convention in August 68, where Humphrey's running for president, and they're in Chicago where Mayor Daley's mafia is running the whole show. So Abbie Hoffman and the Yippies said, let's go there and protest the convention and run a pig for president. They had a little pig. So they got into the park, but there's a great documentary on it where somebody's showing there's a movie called Medium Cool. Look at that. Because the guy, Haskell Wexler, a famous Hollywood guy, goes around, and he filmed the cops training for this in May, June. In other words, the kids, the hippies and the Yippies, they did not know that Daley and them were waiting for something like this to happen, because then they were going to beat up the people and then favor, they'll make the Democrats look like they didn't manage the convention well, and it puts Nixon in, the mafia guy. They put Nixon. The whole thing was orchestrated to get Nixon in. So what you do is you cause a fiasco at the Democratic convention. So they encourage the Yippies and hippies to come and start sort of having their parties in the park. And then they had a few provocateur cops, and then it turns out there was a big bashing, and journalists got beat up. And while that was happening in the middle, and it's right at the same time that the Russians are going into Czechoslovakia, the same time, you have major... That's in 89. No, this is 68, when the Prague Spring is stopped in August 68.
With the tanks rolling into Prague.
It's quite a month.
Yeah.
You know, he had this writing that many people had never seen in Chicago, and then you had the Russia making its move coming in. So the journalists were starting to get beat up, and then somebody became aware, hey, we're all being broadcast. So they all started chanting, the whole world's watching. And that comes up every now and then in any protest, but the Occupy Wall Street got it, and they're using it. And that's why I stuck it on my chart. It's a slogan for a certain period. It's an awareness of the satellite environment. Because 68 is when satellite broadcasting became part of news.
Right.
So really, the satellite environment, when McLuhan wrote about all the events that happened in 68, later in 68, he said it was all an effect of the global theater caused by the satellite. So the whole world, you take it off? You had enough?
Yeah, I got to go before it gets dark on me. I got a long ride.
Oh, okay.
I'll catch you later.
Well, I'm usually here around.
There is no hope. Most will perish. It's an individual trip.
And RNA drops will make you immortal.
Huh?
RNA drops will make you immortal, eternal.
It's just sperm.
No, it isn't. Did you try some?
Yeah,
it smell like sperm to you?
No, it smells like yeast.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, no, some people might say
it looks like sperm.
Yeah, it actually could smell like sperm.
I was joking.
No, but you got some.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're in. You're in. You got no problems, man.
I didn't have any problems to begin with.
So I'll be around, you know, at this time. I usually come here between 3:30 and 5:30. So
yeah.
Come by.
See you later, man.
Okay, great to see you again, Mayor.
I'll see you guys on the internet somewhere.
And I hope you got some insights. You got a good laugh out of that. You now know what Occupy Wall Street's about. It's a big joke. Nice joke. You're still taking it personally. Don't take it personally.
Oh, no.
Okay, don't take it personally.
No. No,
I don't think about death, no.
Death?
Yeah, what about death?
This is death.
Mayor's actually too aware of death.
I agree with that.
She's too aware of death.
Life begins
at death. Yeah. That's a new effort. Life begins at death.
How the abortionist is going to handle that one?
Well, you got four bodies. Kill the ghetto body, the ghetto body, the ghetto body, but the virtual body still goes. You know, it's the old McLuhan joke. The mother looks, the neighbor looks at the baby. What a beautiful baby. The mother says, yeah, but you have to see its photograph. Even better. So we're getting ourselves on tape. I'll live forever because we're getting recorded.
Me too.
Yeah,
By proxy,
yeah. I let you in the house.
Yeah.
So, okay, the second issue is copyright.
You want to go into that?
Yeah.
There's a lot more than death. I mean.
Okay, you lead. You
no,
lead.
Just that. I mean, there's a few things. Like I said, there's a few prongs of tackling death right now. That's why, to me, it's a really exciting time to be living because, so that we have Aubrey de Grey and the stuff that he's doing with trying to. He's doing a lot of he's doing the resveratrol. He was on that tip for a long time as a great thing. And that didn't really pan out too well.
And you think genetic engineering is going to pan out?
Well, genetic engineering eventually will pan out, I think.
You know that
Kim Jong-il's son doesn't bomb us.
I don't want to get distracted, but you know that we claim we are offering what the genetic engineering dream is talking about. We offer it with RNA drops. You know that's what we claim.
This conference is copyright.
Occupy Wall Street Incorporated.
Unincorporated.
Okay, so yeah, copy. Go on about this. The death thing is, that's what I meant in my chart. In the
so there's that. There's the other side of it, which is cryonics, which I really, I mean, that's basically what I'm going to aim for.
You're a materialist. You think your chemical body, that's the key to immortality by getting that altered.
Well. That's one way, yeah. It's cryonics they're doing really well with that. They're already using cryonic technology in war, where they have those IEDs, and if the soldiers, you know, happen to be hit by an IED, they basically the worst injury you can have is those the traumatic brain injury, but that's not really an injury of force per se. It's an injury of what happens after the force. So if you can preserve the brain in the state it was,
right,
and it won't get
rattled.
Well, after it's when the brain tries to recover from the trauma.
Okay,
that's what causes all the injury. So if you can preserve it right after the trauma, which is what they're doing, they're preserving their heads in this, you know, cryonic thing, injecting them with this.
Is that what they do?
So they can fly them to Germany and get the proper treatment in a hospital and stop them from having, you know,
right.
Lasting trauma.
Right. So
that's actually happening. They're doing that.
Yep.
It's just the brain. It's not the entire body. But, I mean, they're getting there really fast. I mean, we've made great strides. And
will you include yourself in this
operation?
We have
humanity that's trying to overcome death, yeah.
And we've made even greater strides with the Dob Sound products.
Yeah, that's great.
Wait, see, now I find it real interesting. I think you're denying death. You're afraid of death when you start projecting this genetic engineering bullshit. You know, you think that's going to happen because there's little indications of something being successful. How do you know they're going to get better? You have a faith in ongoing improvement of technology.
I'm not denying death. I'm afraid of death, and I readily admit it. It's not a denial. That's
you want everybody to go around and say, you're afraid of death.
No, it's an acknowledgement of death and doing something about it. It's,
I mean, well, how do you do so? Oh, what? By getting better technology.
Getting a lot of things. I think you're the one that's denying death right now.
Yeah, this has been unforeseen. I did not know the guy was advocating. I didn't know Myron was advocating in his wonderful paper that we should all go around being scared shitless and get down to business.
No, we ought to. I think that we're at a point as humanity that our society and culture, we can take care of the planet, you know, as far as, like, you know, food and sustenance and things like that. We can really do that. The problem is, no, stop laughing. The problem comes when, because we don't acknowledge our death, and therefore we can't,
we think we can't internalize it,
we think we have to protect our families and our culture and our nation, so we don't give all this abundance to other countries and other people that don't look like us, and this and that, and a lot of inequality. But if we all acknowledge, we wouldn't need wars because it doesn't matter. If we all overcame death, I mean, I think that it would be the first great...
You're swarming over many levels.
Transpeciation.
Yeah.
In humanity.
You had a big word there. Okay. You're swarming all over an issue of death. You're saying, first of all, everybody should stop thinking in believing in genetic engineering or the Pope or something's going to save me. Recognize that you're scared shitless of death. Now you're saying that's the first move.
That's a good move to do, yeah.
And then you're saying, once we recognize...
Well, that's the reason it's not even taken seriously, cryonics. That's the reason that all these, even virtual worlds, like making AI, uploading your brain, atom by atom, into bits.
Is she still my apple?
No. That's the reason that it's not...
Go ahead.
Better known.
What?
These technologies that are really changing a lot of things.
Right,
They're not better known because nobody even wants to know the news about this stuff, because it really terrifies them.
Well... Either from years of doing what I do, but there's multiple levels you're talking and swarming around here, and I want you to notice the contradictory issues or the complications in what you're saying. Okay.
Complexify it, Bob.
Yeah, I'm going to complexify the hell out of this. So it might slip into simplicity in an answer for a really good...
or a laugh.
Yeah. So I find it interesting, you think people are believing, forgetting that they're dying. And that if they actually recognize they're in trouble and going to die.
No.
That would make them egalitarian, and they'd want to include everybody in the crisis of solving it, that we're all going to die.
No, I think that it's, well, that's everybody knows that they're going to die.
Okay.
The thing is, not everybody's aware of how it affects them to know that.
Okay, and it affects them by denying. They start denying it.
They're already denying it in that sense. They're denying that in their daily lives as they go about their daily lives.
How is it affecting them?
It's not, and it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be in their, like, something that you think about all the fucking time.
No.
Unless you're Nietzsche or Goethe or something. You know what I'm saying? But the point is,
unless you're a philosopher.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. You're saying that they shouldn't, but you are asking them to sort of think about it more than they are right now.
Think about how it affects in the individual, on you on an individual level, and society on another level.
So once they start to notice that, how it affects themselves, what would happen? What do you project would happen? That they would get smarter and stop having wars?
I think just like in art, right? And if everybody's living an artful life, this would apply. Just like in art, if the artist starts becoming aware of what he's actually doing or actually trying to do, the art becomes shit. He can't make it anymore.
Right.
And so people can't, and in the same sense,
you're saying
if people are living artfully, if they can see what they're actually doing and why, they won't do it as much anymore. You know?
Okay, so you think that...
It won't be as forceful.
Now, here's the subtle thing. It's the institutions that are there to protect people from the fear of death.
But people create institutions.
Right. And they're trying to assuage their fear of death. What's funny is that the institutions are motivated by a colossal recognition of death. They believe it's real that they're going to die, and the institutions are there to protect them. You want people to recognize death, remember to recognize why the institutions were started, and then don't fall for the institutions. Change their attitude some other way of responding to the fear.
Well, it's a little different because I guess what complexifies that, what complicates that is
good,
the fact that we are trying to overcome it, and it's a worthy endeavor. And so, I mean, it's becoming aware of it in order to forget it, in a way.
Yeah, and so what that, well, see, you become aware of it. The insurance agent comes around. He says, hey, I'll give you some life insurance. See, you became aware of it, and then you assume. What about believing or noticing that there is no death? What about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I don't think
you,
that's
you
really
don't
productive.
That. You accept that. Yeah, you project.
We're going to become food for worms, no matter what.
You're projecting your fear.
What great insights today.
Yeah.
We're all going to become food for worms.
Is that, do you have a problem with that?
I do, yeah.
See, this is user's content. This is your idea, your own fear. You're saying you read a book, Denial of Death, that supplements your fear, and so Myron thinks that everybody should adopt Myron's fear of death. What if most of us don't even care about death?
I don't. That's not what it is at all.
Well, it is. You're talking about your fear of death, and you want other people to be afraid of death.
I'm talking about everybody's fear of death.
Well, how do you know that? There are a lot of people who are not afraid of death.
Point one to me.
Every death is a suicide. And so if you commit suicide, you're looking at death as an escape, as a solution to a problem. And so you're not afraid of it. You see it as a solution.
Yeah, it's a nice phrase every day.
Yeah. Well, that's all I need. For today's media savvy society, I just need a good phrase. I'm in. You're done.
Well, we can't be friends anymore, Bob. You don't want
to
meet.
We're going to have a duel to the death.
You're not one of us.
We're going to have a duel to the death about this one, okay?
Yeah, but if you both need to the thing, the sphere, would that be suicide on my part or what?
Sphere? He hasn't heard of that technology in a long time. He doesn't have the words handy. He called the sword a sphere.
That's the thing. No, they duel the spears.
I'll
meet you
tomorrow morning. You bring that thing and I'll bring my thing, okay?
They duel the spears back in the day.
Yeah. So that's cute. I'll meet you tomorrow morning. You bring your thing, I'll bring my thing, okay?
See whose thing's bigger.
Now, what's funny is we do have an audience, and every now and then they look over and they catch words.
Sure, they think we're out of our mind. It's a shame we got kicked out of the conference room that we were in the banquet hall.
Yeah, Myron.
They didn't want to hear about that.
Yeah. They didn't like the topic. They said 4-5 days of McLuhan, no way. We'll give you 3 days of McLuhan, and you better change the topic. So we tried to, and they objected to the new topic. Okay, back
to... come back and wash the dishes afterwards.
What did McLuhan say about death? He probably said, death ain't what it used to be. You can apply that phrase to everything. Right? It ain't what it used to be under digital conditions.
No, but I mean, I don't think what I'm saying, it reflects what I see in myself, which is the fear of death, but I'm not cowering away and not facing it. What I'm doing is
you
trying...
You won't go so far as to get rid of your fear. You stick with your fear.
It's not about getting over it, though.
You stick with the medium.
You can't get over it unless you... It's a violent thing, man. It's the end.
The point is,
what do you do to something that's attacking you? You try to fight back, and that's what I'm trying to support.
He's trying to support.
Fighting back again.
I know people are going to be laughing at this because they're not going to be...
They're
not going to be in the mood you're in or the concept, the medium of the concept of death that you're inside
Bob,
of. And they're going to say, look at Myron. He's saying, what did you just say? It was a great...
Well, Bob, I'm not persuaded by what people are going to think. I'm persuaded by what I'm saying now.
Yeah, okay. You're persuading yourself as you go. Okay. That sounds pretty eternal to me. If you can always keep persuading yourself, you don't have to worry about death. You got yourself covered. You can pull the wool over your eyes anytime you want.
See, here's the thing. I think you're in denial, Bob.
Listen, I talk to death every day, okay? His name is Ion. Myron's taking a break. He's removing the fruit garbage, the orange skins over to the garbage can, so I'm here by myself waiting for Myron to return. I'm having to live with the insult that I'm in denial of death, okay? You're going to have to go through this. I said a whole bunch of stuff on here.
An orange.
Yeah, I just said a bunch of stuff that you're going to have to see if you roll out or reveal. You're going to do some good some editing of all this, right? You're going to listen to every one of them?
We'll see if I don't die.
Yeah, you ain't dying. I find it interesting. You take the theme of death,
then there's an acoustic and a visual bias response. There's always two responses at least. The acoustic version of it, and that's preliterate, and then the literate response. And you've got a mixture of both going on in yourself in response to the medium of death, because a medium can be a concept, a shared idea. Death is an idea.
I told you that at the beginning.
What? That death is a medium?
You're repeating what I just said at the very beginning.
Well, okay, well, I've come back to your brilliant opener and reminding us of how we haven't made any progress since then, okay? So the complexification is that you have this medium known as death.
Let me stop you there real quick, because the thing is I'm not reacting to the medium of death per se. Death is if it's a natural phenomenon, like the flying V of birds or something.
Yeah.
It's not a medium. We can't analyze it as a medium.
Hmm.
Death itself is
a good
not
question.
A human created thing.
Is it a medium or not?
I think at the beginning, yes, our institutions built around it are media.
Yeah.
All media can be analyzed in terms of death.
So man is death, and the media are extensions of man / death.
Right.
Media are extensions of death.
Right.
Okay. So death.
It's one of the most basic sensibilities that go into creating
what
we create. Like the hula dance, there's death in there. It's staving off death. You know, any gyrating on stage. That's
well. McLuhan does say to understand the media that all media can be seen as sublimations of a sex instinct or a
that's what
instinct.
I mean. And sex is part of it too.
Yeah,
sex is
sure. So all action is a sublimation of that.
Yeah.
Now,
so I think that what I'm trying to get at is the fact that so on another level, photography was a preservation of life and death.
Yeah.
And I think that we really begin to just
yeah,
like
McLuhan
all media.
But
it starts to go on itself and really hyperify.
Use some creativity. That the photograph created the concept of Schrodinger's cat. Because you got a dead cat and a living cat. That they put the two together because that's what the photograph medium was already making possible 20 years before the guy Schrodinger made up the story. Anyway, I'm just saying there's a concept that's evoked by a medium situation, which is what McLuhan's about. So what is the medium today, and what is can you go across the culture and show a common denominator in all the different activities that express the nature of the present Web 2.0 world?
Well, I think that social media is a very, if you're not there, you're dead to the world, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's why nobody, even how many times Facebook has pissed them off.
Yeah,
they got to
go there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're not connected, you're nowhere. You're not anything.
They invented a new medium. Okay, so Zuckerberg, they have to, it's a ritual to honor the guy who seems to have invented the new medium, like YouTube did, by giving him $1 billion.
Yeah.
But he's sufficiently into the five-bodied world that he doesn't care about having a lot of money. It doesn't mean anything anymore. He just wants to be, shows up at work every day. He likes the participation of making new violent disruptions of the Facebook environment. That's all they do. They just manufacture new invasions. But we're stuck with that medium.
Well, it's fairly imperialist, his motivations. Let's admit.
I saw a documentary of him. He just likes, he may have, when he's home alone, he needs that kind of thinking. But
what he's going for in the end is totality. You know, he wants, that's why he created Facebook like button.
Death.
He wants a piece of Facebook on every website. He wants to incorporate every website
into
Facebook.
Because he's denying his own death. He's denying his own death.
Everybody is, yeah.
Oh, now we go to everybody. Okay, but everybody is. So that's no big deal? Then how are you going to get them to admit it if everybody says, oh, it's normal? Everybody denies death. What are you trying to tell us, Myron? We all deny death. You know, how are we going to change that? That's normal. So how are you going to make them? You could say each new
medium. What it allows you to think about.
Well, there's a lot of death imagery. So
to admit that everybody's a nice. What I mean is that it allows people to get over that knowledge and sort of start
the idea
and why
Myron,
it affects you then.
The Myron idea allows you to get over it. But if you make one idea the content of media, it'll drive everybody crazy and they'll not look at it anymore. They don't want to have the same monomania idea on there for more than a couple of days.
See, I guess the reason that I brought death to the table today was to introduce him to everybody. And
I
brought death to the table because I think it's such a disruptive and such a basic medium.
I want to just change the term. Being human is such a disruptive.
Mortality is.
Yeah, mortality. So you're just emphasizing man. Man knows himself because he dies.
All right.
I just think that it's tough to analyze death in that in the same terms as any other medium because it's such a basic thing, just like analyzing sex.
It's not an extension. It's like, you know, and media are extensions of man. What is man? Man is sex, death, food, and whatever, okay?
Yeah.
And that's a basic thing, and it can't be translatable. It's like Eric says, you can't do a tetrad on nature.
Right.
So the artifacts. So we should be talking about the concept and the media environments, not about death itself.
But if we create something that conquers death, then you have an entirely new set of rules.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I really wanted to emphasize. How would that affect humanity?
You want to crash
what program. Is a post-death?
You want people to wake up and start funding solving death. That's
well, I think it's worthwhile, but that's not what I'm trying to like.
Well, yes, you are. You're trying to do something here.
No, what I just think it's an interesting idea to think about. Like, what would happen? How would our media change?
Oh yeah, no, that'd be a big, big issue. That's what I wrestle with. That's why I say I deal with death every day. I deal with the solution of it. We know how it's going to be solved here at Iandom or Dobstown.
All right.
We know how it's going to be solved.
How do you think once it's solved, no matter how we get there, how do you think it's going to affect human creations?
It's going to have a lot of unforeseen effects,
right.
Like any new medium. It's going to have an incredible. I even think that we have people reacting.
I mean, I think
to
it's even beyond the level of what the atom bomb did.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
right.
This is like something that has been with us forever.
That's right.
And so that's what I mean. What would a post-death media look like? You know,
it would look just like today. It would look just like humans have always reacted to their own eternity. They pretended that they couldn't die. They'd try as many ways to off themselves.
I agree with that. But it would also become much more of a tragedy. Suicide would be such more of an art form.
Yeah, art form.
But it used to be that way, too. Suicide used to be a certain...
Now, here's what's interesting. If you look at each new media environment, McClone was pointing out, he was answering your question by saying, we can see what happens to people. If you got rid of death, it's the same as when you bring in a new technology and it creates a new medium environment, that's death to that civilization, and we see that often all through history.
I guess what I'm getting at is, like, I think that to conquer death and to live with that idea, without the idea of the void and of death, without needing it anymore, seems to me that it would change almost just about everything that we do. Take the medium of the concept of the moment, living moment to moment. Every moment becomes what? Does it become devalued? When you're talking on that level, you're not even talking on, like, how does it affect this sense or that sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, it really is fundamental.
No, don't take sense literally. Sense is meaning. Think of the word effect. It would affect people's senses of where they were.
Yeah. Sense and sensibility.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
But what I mean is, it's just so powerful of an idea that.
And I'm saying
we'd have to come up with a whole new set of tools.
Yeah, I think Facebook, you get pretty close to the amazing thing you're setting out when a new technology comes into. It's like Facebook changed everything, made everybody different.
Virtual worlds will do the same. There's the there's a psychologist right now that he's a linguistic psychologist. And what he did was he wanted to know how we acquire language. You know, he really wanted to settle this argument once and for all. So what he did was he just overloaded with data. What he did was he had a kid. He said, okay, we're going to put hidden cameras in every room, capture every moment of this kid's life, and we'll deal with the data. We'll sort it out later. You know, and they've actually made some really good insights about, you know, how children acquire and how they deal with, you know, even when they're alone in a room, how they deal with, you know, sounding out words and phrases and syllables and things like that. So, but it's interesting to me, the interesting part of it is the fact that he has his whole kid's life documented, you know, and that's going to be the norm. I mean, as video cameras become, our eyes are going to become video cameras in the future. And, you know, because they'll be able to be augmented with information, things like Terminator kind of thing. So I think that, you know, that brings it to that vector of attack, attacking death. Is to live on in virtuality, to live on, you know, so if you have all this detritus, all this data of somebody's, you know, almost mundane moments to their most important moments, what happens is you can develop virtual avatars that take all that data somehow, crunch it all, and can predict how that person would act, and so they live on. They could be a hologram in your living room. forever.
So a hologram of yourself.
Hologram of somebody, you know, because it'll be just inferred
right.
the behavior that person will
take.
Right, right. I mean, it's true. Even now, they do experiments. I mean, it's basically proven that they can predict 6 minutes in advance whether you're going to, like, move your hand like that or not.
Right.
I mean,
right.
you're, you know, and it really hurts the idea of free will, you know, when you think about it that way. Not really to me. But, I mean, once they get really good at this stuff, I mean,
yeah.
the sky's the limit with that. And I mean, yeah, it's going to, I mean, I don't even care if it's the real grandpa in the room. The fact is that, and I don't even think the people care. It's going to be the fact that interaction, that's the main thing, symbolic interaction.
Communication, that's human desire.
Exactly.
Then we're going to be
communicating
death.
To death. To
communication to deny
death. The sun dies.
Yeah, know. See, so the media are denial of death. Communication is the human ignoring of the death and silence of death.
Yeah, we'll be resurrecting people, and then it's going to be communication is going to be so mundane. That's the thing. That's an interesting idea. Why would we communicate with each other anymore?
Right.
Because we don't have anything to deny.
Yeah.
We don't have anything ourselves.
That's why people would start saying, I don't believe that, and start suiciding themselves as an art form just to keep the conversation going.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's happening already. Mass suicides, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, 90s.
Naughty knots today.
Yeah.
Including the last decade. You only took it up to the 90s.
I didn't know.
Naughty knots is the knot of the 2000s.
Okay.
You know, 2000 to 2010.
Oh, yeah,
it's
yeah.
called the Knots, N-A-U-G-H-T, or the Naughty Knots.
I don't know how many mass suicides there were then.
No, that's why. Well, the Iraq War.
Was that the 90s? Yeah.
That was 93.
Okay.
You had the Iraq War.
Yeah.
A lot of suicidal activities, suicide bombers.
Well, a lot of people coming back from the war. Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, if we want to go on a little tangent about killing people, I read in Laws of Media, I just read yesterday about how... there's a little thing that Eric puts in there about the guy talking, saying, okay, well, you know, if you gave a soldier, pilot, a can of gasoline, and this is relevant because somebody actually was doused with gasoline and set on fire in an elevator in New York 2 days ago.
Okay.
It was an old lady, and the guy just walked through a Molotov cocktail, walked away, burned her alive in the elevator. Terrible. They caught the guy. But so this is relevant now. They said that, you know, you do that to any normal person, 99% of people won't do that. You know, if you tell them to set a 3-year-old on fire, you know, they're just going to laugh at you and say,
right.
Get the hell out of my face. You put them in control of, in the cockpit of an airplane, tell them to drop the bombs on it, they have no compunction.
They can't
see it. Even think twice. You know, and that's
the first time.
Any normal person.
People would stop. Yeah, most, if they've never done it before. Those guys never done it before. Now we know that story, but he's appalled that he did it and didn't know. But so you wouldn't be able to get people to do that. But you get them to do some other invisible environment thing that they didn't
do. Right. Well, now you have the drones. That's the next big thing.
Right.
The drones doing it from, you know, remotely, so you're not even in the country.
Yeah, yeah. So there's an example of human indifference.
Yeah. So, I mean, but once we... I mean, I think that the big thing that I was getting at with death is once you conquer it, every life becomes...
meaningless.
No, but it becomes, at the same time, it becomes unfathomably more precious. You know, like, think of a car accident. If somebody expects to live to 60, 70, 80, 90 now, think about if they were expected to live till they were 30,000 and they get hit by a car. I mean, that's a tragedy beyond... You know,
and get hit by a car.
They're 200 years old.
Oh, you're
get hit by a car.
Oh,
it's a tragedy beyond.
Yeah, you're saying we don't have the technology to revitalize them.
I'm saying if we did.
Yeah, when, once we're able, a car would not be a tragedy. You'd just pick you up.
Well, if we could resurrect, but I'm saying, if we couldn't,
people
you're
living. Saying the idea that we have the technology to live 30,000 years, but now we don't do it, therefore it's a tragedy when someone dies.
It's even more of a tragedy than if they were to live to only 90, because you'd have all that other time ahead of them, tons more time ahead of them.
They won't get
what they could accomplish.
See, I'm missing your point here. We haven't solved it. Are you talking about we now have solved it and we can live 30,000 years?
No, I'm talking about once we conquer death.
Yeah, we solved it.
Then, if a person is hit by a car now, we haven't solved it yet. Okay.
Yeah.
And they're 5 years old, they're expected to live to 90. That will be a tragedy.
Okay.
But if they're 200 and they're expected to live to 50,000,
you're saying that's a
bigger
tragedy.
More of a tragedy.
But if
it's
you
can
live to 50,000, you wouldn't die in a car accident because you'd have the technology to fix that.
Well, we'd hope so. But
yeah. Well,
I mean, it's like the Google executive said, it's a glitch that the computer was invented after the car.
Yeah.
Because he thinks that the future is all about self-driving cars.
Right.
And car accidents will be a thing of the past. You're right.
But you're saying that
it's just the way in which it enhances.
If we can live for 30,000 years, we'd have technology to make you live for 30,000 years, then you would not suffer from a car accident because they just replenish your body.
But if you had died on the spot, I mean, we'd still be immortal.
Oh, well, why would you die? They could revitalize. See, that's...
But if you're dead on the spot...
No, that's what living...
Nothing they can do to help you.
When you say immortality, that means you've got the technology.
I'm saying on the one vector of, you know, doing it slowly, like cancer or, you know, what happens with radiation? The half-life thing, the decay.
Yeah, yeah.
We decay. That's the reason that we... So on the one vector, if we stop decay... Natural causes, say, of death. You know, that would make artificial causes of death much worse than they already are.
Yeah, but
much more of a tragedy.
If you are going to be able to live 10,000 years, then that means you've mastered all ways of body decay. See, so you would not die from a car accident if you could live 30,000 years, because we had the technology to keep you alive for 30,000 years.
But that's not true, because it's like gene therapy.
Okay, so
this is on the long now, no, sort of thing.
Well, you're
this
saying
kind of
when we're halfway there, we know we could be made to live, just so something could be done to your body, you wouldn't be made younger, but you could be kept alive for 300 years, you know, taking the pill. But you're still subject to something. If you get your head chopped off, they can't fix it.
Yeah.
You're talking about the tragedy as we get closer to the final victory.
Yeah.
It'll be tragic for those.
Well, that's the thing. That's another thing to think about because, you know...
It's like in a war, a guy dies in the last day of the war.
Yeah, exactly. Or after the war has been ceasefired and he doesn't know it yet.
Yeah, you get killed. Yeah, okay, so you're talking about that thing. But all that...
But the point of it is that... It's like now. It's like with Kim Jong-il dead, you know, and they're saying this whole, all this confusion about is he going to pull the trigger on nuclear thing, you know, because he's too young to know better or something, you know?
Is that what they're saying?
Something like that, yeah. It's not as seasoned as his dad was.
Yeah, the chaos butterfly has died, and I don't know what the new chaos butterfly is going to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's just one guy.
Right.
The whole thing of the naughty knots
revolved
around him or whether he was going to nuke it or not.
Cold War idea.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, and it's like, it's the reason we propped up all those people, the Egyptian and all these dictators, because, as long as he's bad, but, you know, we can't let everybody else be bad, too.
Yeah, you never see bad people.
Yeah, it's a futile argument and futile.
And this is the Android meme just blowing itself up over this issue.
Yeah.
You know, that's the...
But I mean, it's another reason why we might not survive this interim period between getting there.
Yeah, to your utopia.
You know what I mean?
Because it's going to make utopia. We ain't going to get there, maybe.
Yeah, because of that.
So, well, I'm not going to deny death. I'm going to worry my butt off about that we're not going to make it, because I am confronting my death.
Not about worrying.
What is it about then?
It's about taking action.
Okay, what action will we take right now?
Well, for instance, there's another...
You tell that little
girl
over there.
I'm not sorry.
Tell that other kid over there.
Yeah.
Wake her up so she doesn't become a little zombie, a consuming zombie when she's 16.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I think that there's something to be, like... For instance, I think that's why you're seeing vampires so much more in the popular culture. And not just vampires, but vampires as everyman, because I think that our culture's becoming aware slowly of the possibility of conquering it. Yeah.
Right, so then having vampires is an expression of that.
Yeah.
So
not only a vampire, though,
and then
no longer an outsider of the vampire. The vampire now in popular culture is like everyman. It's the everyman vampire, the everyman zombie. You know, that's the flip side of it.
Right. Okay,
everybody's sitting there at night, everybody's a night owl on the Facebook, you know what I mean?
This is where you're missing the point there. Everybody's starting to recognize that we can conquer death, but that's a level of denial. They're not
facing the problem itself.
The gap between when we get there and now is what you're talking about.
And I guess I'm worried about the fact that, okay, if we have this new technology, we can fix him or something. We can make him better. We can fix him.
Yeah.
We have the technology kind of thing.
You're trying to tell.
The thing is that if we implement that technology, it's not going to change much unless people understand why it's so,
unless
important. Unless people understand. I don't know. I mean, to me, I'm not trying to change minds.
You're trying to make Abu Ghraib or anybody who comes up with a solution, you're trying to get coverage for him. That's another aspect. Because
everybody's
so whacked out and denying it, they don't know that, hey, we could solve this terrible problem in a couple of weeks. We put
they don't
want to.
Right. They don't want to think about it, first of all. But the thing is they're going to do it eventually anyway. But once they do it and it becomes, available to the rich first, probably, and it's going to become available to everybody, if there's no real understanding, I think it'll turn into that mass suicide, because if there's no real understanding about why the hell...
Why would it turn into mass suicide?
Like you said, if we could live forever...
Oh, people wouldn't be ready for it, yeah.
Right, and that's the thing. So I think that that's why I'm not trying to get people to think about it, per se, as you think I am. I think that it's already happening.
Right, let me tell you about the already happening. Barry Nevin used to talk about this. Literate world has history. The electric world has eternity. We've been living with no death more and more, the image of no death in the electric suspension, the suspended judgment. So I've said that the effects are here before the actual technology shows up.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's
and
everything.
And that would explain why the vampires... Well, I'm quoting McLuhan. Barry Nevin and McLuhan did this book together. So, so the vampire thing is an effect.
Exactly.
Anticipated
harbinger.
Causes.
The canary in the...
Yeah, and I say that I and my team are the causes. We're the ones who are going to solve that issue.
Okay, great. Ring me when you got it.
Yeah. Well, it'll find you. We can't be running around ringing everybody. They got to find us.
I thought we were boys.
We're boys?
We had something here.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Well, you're lucky. You came here. I'll remember you. Yeah. I'll always remember this. I'll remember Myron. I'll always remember Myron.
You don't have to always remember me. Just remember me when you have the solution.
That's right. I remember one guy
showing the rest of the time.
My little McLuhan conference. So only one guy that always indebted to Myron showing up and saving me from gross humiliation. But what were we just doing? Okay, so shall we do copyright? Do it in about 30 seconds. Copyright's a big issue, yeah, but death is a bigger issue, so forget copyright as an issue.
That's how I feel. I think that there's so much to it, and it's not being really said as much, you know? I really think that there's something to all this, and there's a reason that zombies and vampires are the most popular thing going, and have been for the past, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. You know? Interview with the Vampire, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and another movie called Not the Hunger. Well, anyway, it was another vampire movie.
I saw that many years ago with David Bowie.
No, I'm
Buffy and Twister. True Blood. True Blood is the TV show.
True Blood's the TV show. Yeah. That's popular now, yeah. And
there's
zombies, The Walking Dead, that stuff.
There's the commercial. Right now, I noticed when I was looking at YouTube today, is that True Blood is a book. And so it has this little...
The Adventures of Snooki Stackhouse.
Yeah, it has a little girl, a teenager, giving the book to the grandmother.
Yeah.
Did you see the commercial?
No.
And quickly runs through the plot, all these guys, Snooki has to deal with the vampire, blah, 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 and they end up having an orgy.
Yeah.
That's what she says to the grandmother. And allows it. Grandma said, what? Holding the...
Is that an HBO commercial? Or?
It was on every YouTube I clicked on.
Oh, okay.
Or I think it was YouTube. It might be Market Watch, but one of those where you click on today's news and that commercial, today's commercial comes up today.
It's a commercial for True Blood, though.
Yeah, and it's a Christmas setting. The family's opening the presents, and she's explaining to the grandmother
what
she just got, and it ends up, and they all end up having an orgy.
Well, that's the thing with True Blood. The first couple seasons were pretty good and interesting, and then it just turned into basically sex.
Yeah. And even then they cut
titillating
back,
and
they cut back on that. There was a lot more sex the first couple of seasons, and now they kind of got into the ghoulish.
Maybe people.
Oh, you haven't? I've watched it. I've seen all seasons. So if you haven't watched the latest,
I stopped
season,
watching in the third season. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, it was winding down.
It was just becoming a soap opera.
Right. Well, actually, by the fourth or fifth season, it stopped having so much sex, but it was just stupid ghoulishness.
Yeah, they started to make up really weird out there shit.
Yep.
Like the Greek gods and stuff that were real.
Maynard.
Yeah, I mean, the concept is great. The concept is fantastic. The vampires finally come out of the closet, so to speak, and, this and that. But that's about death, too. I mean, his prior series was about 6 Feet Under.
Oh, I never saw that. Yeah.
It's all about death. the family that owns a funeral home.
Well, the other guy that does this stuff is J.J. Abrams with Lost and Fringe.
Well, he did Buffy the Vampire Slayer, too.
Yeah, so he's dealing with death from the beginning.
I mean, all the top dogs are dealing with it.
Well, that's the other
there's
thing.
Something to it. And those are artists. I mean, those are auteurs.
But see, there's where that idea is a cliche from some people's minds perspective. That death, if you keep thinking the other view, the opposite view of you is do not make a big deal out of death, because that makes everybody afraid and that keeps all the showbiz going, everybody thinking death's a big deal. See, there's a two-edged coin here for you.
Wait, what's wrong with showbiz?
It just plays up on death all the time. It's just a big deal.
So it would lose its force.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I totally get that, and that's the thing. That's why I'm not trying to be forceful about it. It's just something that I really think about a lot, and I've wanted to do a thesis on it, to be honest.
Right.
But like, I've had my own demons about it, and it is still really difficult to face, you know, certain aspects.
I remember you many years ago thinking about this issue and presenting to a few people, and they hadn't thought of it. I said, you know, you realize what happens when they solve death? What are you gonna do then? I projected it as a future condition of purposelessness.
Yeah.
Meaninglessness.
Right. Yeah. No, it's very difficult, and that's why it's. I mean, I think it's really the thing that is going to define humanity in the next 100 years or so.
Yep.
What should we do? What can we do?
And I think when we at Irondom present that issue, because we have the voice of where you go when you die. The Goth is who Ion is, and he's here now saying there's no death. The Goth is emptying. You know, our statements are quite ridiculously metaphysical, or metaphysically push the envelope of ridiculosity.
Push the envelope with that phrase.
Yeah. I'm burying the envelope.
Yeah, 6 feet under.
Yeah, so do we want to do copyright, or is nothing to say about it?
Not when you dealt with death.
Yeah, that's right.
Tales in comparison. So
yeah, copyright is another denial of death.
Right?
It really is. Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's interesting. I heard yesterday I went to Haleakala Crater, and I was talking with the nice, kind ladies that drove me up there and back.
You weren't on a bus, not in a tourist situation.
No, I ended up being able to get a ride, you know, from some people that were living in Kihei.
And they're going up anyway?
They were going up anyway.
Oh.
So, yeah.
So you had five people.
Well, the three of us.
Yeah, it's a small group talking.
And then, we were just talking, and she was telling me about this tradition here in the courts that anybody, if they can prove Hawaiian ancestry, they're entitled to go into a raffle of some sort
mm-hmm.
and get a land lease for $99, for 99 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking to myself, yeah, but what happens after they can use the land as they see fit, 2 miles of whatever, 2 square miles. But then what happens after 99 years? They just lose it all again.
Yeah, good point.
You know? It seems strange.
Well, maybe they made a lot of money from it. And
well, no, they didn't imagine 99 years in the future anymore.
Yeah,
you know
that
I mean?
Was a long time.
Yeah, they were like, oh.
Yeah, 100 years ago when they made
can't
the
even
rule.
Imagine 99.
Yeah, I only lived 45 years. I'm not going to live.
By that time, land will be obsolete.
So they got to change the rule. That's right.
Yeah.
They say, I give you a 500-year lease.
Yeah.
So what do they get? A part of Hawaii?
Yeah, they get some land somewhere that's designated for the thing if they win the raffle. And it's,
so they do this every now and then. They must have this raffle.
Yep.
And I wonder where the are occupying the land. Where is it? Where's this space?
I have no idea. You want to get in on that? You want to be a
no,
squatter
no,
like
no,
Mary?
I get lots of land already.
Yeah.
Be like squat. Yeah. Okay. I think we've ended. I think we've come to a good point here. I have a poise in relation to the spectrum of issues that we should be concerned with over the next 6 months.
Very good. I think a lot of insights were had.
Yeah, many insights, many breakthroughs. And so we welcome your responses to this conference.